law school. It's an investment in your future. But like all investments, without the right advice, it can lead to disaster. That's where Pre-Law Pro comes in. Whether you're exploring the law, navigating the admissions process, or need personalized career guidance, at Pre-Law Pro, we've got your back. Don't gamble on your future. Invest in it. Get started today at prelawpro.com.
How can I make myself more competitive?
How do I build my network?
I want my career to go to the next level, but I don't really know where to start.
I hate the job I am in. What else can I do?
I want to work in healthcare, but I don't want to be a doctor.
I need connections in a new industry. Where should I start?
Whether you're a college student trying to decide on a career path, a young professional trying to develop their career, or maybe you're in the mid to late stages of your own professional journey and you're looking for a new challenge, or maybe you're facing an unexpected job search. Whoever you are, wherever you are, welcome to the Professionists Podcast. And together, let's find your fit. Welcome back to another episode of the Professionists Podcast. In this week's episode, we're going to talk with registered dietitian Isla Garcia. Isla is the CEO of The Millennial Nutritionist, which focuses on weight loss solutions for millennials, and she's also a clinical inpatient dietitian at Duke Riley Hospital in North Carolina. Now, the career of a dietitian is an interesting one. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the 2020 median pay was just over $63,000 a year. And the number of jobs right now is a little over 74,000. If we look at the next 10 years or so, we are expecting a job growth of around 8%. Now, dietitians work in a number of settings, and we're going to explore that some more in this episode. So without further ado, let's jump on into the interview. Thanks for joining us, Isla.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. How are you?
Very well, very well. You are another one of our health professionals that, you know, we've been exploring, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, and now I guess they're physician's associates. I think they just changed their name. And so today you're going to help us understand a little bit about the world of nutrition and being a clinical dietitian. But before we jump into that, why don't we just take a step back to your college days? Like, what attracted you to nutrition science to begin with?
Yeah, I feel like for me, it started a really, really long time ago when I was a kid. I, for some reason, just loved knowing that I felt better with eating. I would say maybe like around high school, I noticed that I just felt like my stomach felt better. I was able to move around a lot better. And I was from a really, really small town, and cooking was something that I could do to entertain myself. So I loved to learn about food that way. And then learning to cook fun food, I really liked it. And then I just like the instructions part of food. So like knowing, okay, you have to eat 6 servings of fruits and vegetables. Wow. There's like an instruction laid out for how you should eat. That's amazing. Why doesn't everybody know about this? I remember asking my mom, is there a job where I can just teach people how to eat? She's like, well, yeah, that's a dietitian. She was a nurse and worked with a dietitian. They educated people who had diabetes. And I was like, wow, that is awesome. And so then multiple things along my life all like kind of pushed me back on the road when I was trying to get off. I was a really competitive runner in high school and wanted to run in college. And nutrition plays a huge hand in being successful with that. So that invigorated me yet again into nutrition. And then when I got to college, gained a little bit of weight, as a lot of people do. And I was like, okay, I just need to, you know, figure out, even though I was an athlete, I was like, okay, I can't eat 10 brownies a day anymore. And so using that information for myself to figure out how to lose the weight back. And then even things like my grandpa, he died of complications of high cholesterol. And then I found out I have actually high cholesterol. I'm not overweight, but it doesn't really have to do much with weight. And so all these things kind of pushed me back on the path because I thought I wanted to be a cook. I thought I wanted to go into medicine. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I need to do. And so through college, I went into college knowing that I wanted to study nutrition, but I didn't want to be a dietitian. I was like, maybe I'll do occupational therapy. Maybe I'll be a physical therapist. Maybe I'll be a doctor. I enjoyed learning about nutrition, but I didn't really want to be a dietitian because that job didn't really appeal to me anymore. But then as I got into college and I went through it, I was like, I can't do anything else. I just love learning about it.
Did you do a lot during college in your summers, for example? Did you shadow? Did you do informational interviews? How did you explore?
So throughout college, I didn't think I wanted to be a dietitian. So I didn't really shadow dietitians that much. One summer, I shadowed an occupational therapist. But then after that summer, I was like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. And then I shadowed a physical therapist. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that anymore either. I shadowed a doctor. And so I was kind of like kept going through all of these things. And then so by the time I was ready to graduate, I was like, well, let me just be a dietitian. I have this degree. And I learned that I did need to shadow somebody. So I went on to get a master's degree so I could spend those summers shadowing. So those summers I did work actually really hard to shadow dietitians. For some reason, they have their own interns, and so they typically don't take on a shadow, which is like a whole another process of the education part of it. But I did work in a hospital cafeteria, which is actually a gold mine. If anybody's out there listening that wants to be a registered dietitian, working in a hospital cafeteria is really, really valuable because a lot of the dietitians work with the hospital staff and the cafeteria to feed their patients. And so I did get to network that way. I got to talk to patients about what they were eating as a hospital cafeteria worker. So that's kind of how I spent my summers once I was really serious into becoming a dietitian.
So your master's is in food science. Is that what most people going into your career path pursue as a master's degree, or can you use a number of different health science master's degrees?
So for right now, it's changing. There's a lot of changes going on with the education part of becoming registered dietitian. When I went to school, you only had to have an undergrad degree. Now, I think now they kept talking about it being like every year they kept pushing it back. So I may at this point be that you do have to have a master's. From what I understand, you can have a master's in anything. Like some people are going to get an MBA. Some dietitians are going to get like a master's in, I don't know, anything else. I was actually looking into getting like a food packaging degree instead of what I ended up getting. But that's, yeah, it's really across the board. It's not super common right now for dietitians to have master's degrees. I just happened to go to the same school that I went to in undergrad and they only had one option. So that's what I did.
You've mentioned a couple of times that you're a registered dietitian, and you know, in the lead up to our interview, you mentioned that there's this distinction to be made. Help us understand that distinction.
Yes. So this is a very hot question for a lot of dietitians. So a registered dietitian is a title that is very protected. You have to go through this very specific education process. We have a license that can be taken away if we give unethical or not nutrition-backed recommendations. We can't, you know, be sponsored by things to recommend, like nutritional shakes, stuff like that. And so the education process is you have to get your bachelor's degree. Again, I'm pretty sure they have to get a master's degree now. And then you have to do this 1 year of internship, which is why I was saying it's also hard to be a shadow because you have to do an internship. It's kind of similar to like a medical residency, or I think a lot of medical professions, they have to do some sort of like supervised practice mm-hmm. where you're basically being trained by dietitians on how to be a dietitian. You do that for a full year. You have to pay for that. It's unpaid. And then you have to sit for a licensing exam, and then you have to keep up your continuing education credits. So that's what it is to be a registered dietitian. To be a nutritionist, it's a self-proclaimed title. Anyone mm-hmm. can be a nutritionist. At least in America, anyone can be a nutritionist. Like you could call yourself a nutritionist. The trainer down the block can call themselves a nutritionist. I market myself as a nutritionist because people know what that is. But technically, I am a registered dietitian, which is just like a higher esteem.
So it goes to show if you are looking for the services of a dietitian, you're going to get someone who's been licensed and properly accredited if you search for a registered dietitian.
Yeah. And a huge part of that is the clinical part. So the internship that we have to do, it's really structured. We have to spend like 4 months in a hospital, a couple months in a cafeteria learning about food service management, and a couple months working in community, which is like WIC. They have to have a dietitian. Food pantries sometimes have to have a dietitian. And so we understand so much more about when a client like comes to me and they're like, I'm on these medications. I know exactly what that is. If they say they have some sort of like kidney disease, I know exactly how to help them. And I know that I can't tell them to have a lot of protein, unlike other clients. So things like that are what a registered dietitian would understand as opposed to just a nutritionist.
I want to just do a little bit of a deeper dive into your business a little later on. I want to talk about the millennial nutritionist and how that came about. But in your current role, I understand that you're a clinical inpatient dietitian at Duke Riley Hospital. Walk us through what that involves.
Yes. So as a clinical inpatient dietitian, it's so complicated because everybody eats. And so everybody has to see kind of a dietitian when they go to the hospital. But to try to explain it concisely, the biggest thing that registered dietitians really do in the hospital is actually to help people eat more. Because typically when you're in a hospital, you don't really want to eat. You know, you feel bad. And especially a lot of the reasons you'd come to the hospital, like cancer, AIDS, things like pancreatitis, liver disease, all of those typically decrease your appetite, but it's increasing your metabolism. So what it means is you become malnourished really, really quickly. And patients who are malnourished have really bad outcomes in the hospital. So dietitians really help support the whole team to make sure that the patient is eating, because sometimes people, other providers will forget that patients still need to eat, because if not, then they're not going to have the strength to get through all their procedures, things like that. So that's a big thing that dietitians do in the hospital. The other thing is, you know, so many diseases have to do with nutrition, diabetes, hypertension, cancer, like I said again. And so to have a dietitian be able to educate the patient when they're in the hospital is really helpful so that they don't get readmitted. Because a lot of times if a patient gets readmitted into the hospital doesn't get any, or it gets very limited funds from Medicaid and Medicare. So if they can prevent that at all, that's really helpful. And a lot of those patients who come back are because of like nutrition related things. So those are kind of the two big things that a dietitian does. And then there's like other really random things. Like sometimes, like I had a patient who would like was needed like cornstarch every 2 hours or would die or something like that. So that would be like an example of working with the cafeteria, because then they have to go in and talk to the cafeteria staff and be like, okay, I need you every 2 hours to deliver cornstarch to this patient. And then, yeah, so that's kind of a summary of what a dietitian would do. There's a lot of different things, but the biggest things are malnutrition, getting patients to eat more, and just doing everything that they can to educate them so they're not readmitted.
So my follow-up question to that is, and anyone who's spent any time as a patient in a hospital kind of knows where this question is probably going to go, it's not always the best food in terms of how it tastes. So does your role, is it more prescriptive and you allow kind of the catering staff to come up with the food that meets the nutritional criteria, or are you menu setting? And what's the hands-on relationship to the actual production of food in the hospital?
Yeah, so remember that a part of that internship I was talking about, so the training that dietitians have to have are, we do have to know how to work in food service, because for some settings, dietitians are actually the food service managers. That wasn't my job. My boss was the food service manager. So she managed the cafeteria, and then she also managed the group of clinical dietitians. And so it's really, dietitians do have to be well-versed in the budgeting part of all of the business part as well. And then coming down to figuring out how can we, on a budget for a business, also provide food that keeps people alive. And so it is really hard, because it's always, it seems like for business and nutrition, they're like, the oppositely related, because people want to eat chicken nuggets more than they want to eat salad. And so, you know, the thing that's going to sell is unhealthy. And so I think that a lot of times the dietitians try to find middle ground there for our hospital. I felt like we did a pretty good job where I worked with food. I mean, we tried to be culturally appropriate the best we could. I mean, we tried to give tasty items. But the other thing that's hard is if you are in a hospital and you are on, like, if you have hypertension, they're automatically going to put you on a low sodium diet. And low sodium diet, unfortunately, just isn't very tasty.
Yeah.
So, you know, a big part of what dietitian, like my job was to see, the doctor decides what diet that the patient is on. But because it's the dietitian's responsibility to get the patient to eat more, if I had, first, like an example, a patient with cancer who was malnourished, who also had hypertension, maybe the doctor was going to put them on a low sodium diet, but then they're not eating at all. For me, I care more that they're eating. So it's my job to advocate for the patient. Hey, can we, take off this salt restriction so that the patient's going to eat more? And that's what I think is, you know, more important right now, as opposed to, you know, yeah, just go give them more medication to treat their hypertension for now. So it's all about figuring out like how the diet can help the patient be better in the hospital and get out faster. So it's not like dietitians make up the menu. Maybe that food service manager does, and that's more of like the business standpoint and how she would make decisions that way. But then there's the other group of dietitians, the clinical dietitians, that look at the what's available to the patient to try to make the menu a little bit better so that they have better health outcomes. Does that kind of answer the question?
It does. It does. And I guess the next question is, when you look at your peer dietitians, are most of them working in a hospital setting, or is it fairly spread between maybe private practice consulting, or do you find that most folks are actually in a hospital?
Yeah, I would say most people are in a hospital or even just like clinical. So clinical can also mean that somebody works dialysis. So if somebody's on has kidney failure, they have to go to dialysis to get their blood cleaned out because that's what your kidneys do. And so they have to have a dietitian in every single dialysis unit, and patients have to go to dialysis 3 times a week. And so that's a big job, or even like outpatient clinical places. So like a gastroenterologist will typically have a dietitian with them to help somebody who has Crohn's disease who doesn't know how to eat. So like jobs that are outpatient but still clinical, I would say that makes up the majority, because I mean, honestly, it's like pretty good benefits, solid job, and health insurance helps pay for those dietitians. So I would say that most of them do work in clinical.
And do you find that it's a fairly young profession, or do you find that a lot of your colleagues are older, and as a millennial, you're kind of one of the younger dietitians, or what's the age demographic look like in your experience?
Yeah, I would actually say that it's younger. I was told by an instructor once, and I do feel like it's true, that a lot of dietitians, like we all have a kind of similar personality, like a socio-demographic makeup. And a lot of times dietitians end up kind of becoming stay-at-home moms, or like they don't typically stay with the job all that long. It might not be true, but this is what I was told. And kind of like what, from what I've seen, it is kind of true that most dietitians that I meet are younger. And then once they get older, a lot of times they'll like take a break and maybe take time off work and then come back and do something else, maybe part-time, which there's a lot of part-time job for dietitians. So that's great to have that work-life balance. But I would say the majority of dietitians that I know are younger, especially the ones in clinical, because it's actually pretty entry-level to work in clinical.
Okay. And fairly even male, female? Is it mainly men, mainly women?
Oh, no. It is like 98. They always say the statistic is 98% white female. It's a very like, just like everybody is pretty much the same as dietitians. They're definitely trying to work on it. A lot of the men that go into nutrition are more like your sports dietitian. So a lot of professional athletes, they'll have dietitians that work, or like sports teams, they have like, or any like colleges, they'll typically, I feel like that's where a lot of the men go. But I did work with a couple of men who worked in clinical that like more of that like scientific part of it, but it is a lot of women.
And with so many people, I guess, practicing in that early chunk of their career and then maybe transitioning to part-time work, does that open up a lot of opportunities for you to progress in your own career? So first of all, are there opportunities to progress into more leadership type roles? And then also, what is a fairly standard career progression look like for a dietitian?
So for the first part of the question, I think there are. I really want to see more dietitians being a little bit more leaderly and a little bit pushing a little bit more forward, because like I said, everybody in the world eats. Like, I don't know why there aren't more dietitians in the world, because literally every single person has to do with what we do for our career, but there just aren't that many, or there's just really not a good awareness for it. And I don't know. I heard this, and I don't know if it's true, that a lot of it is because it's a 98% female, and I don't know if we don't have a whole lot of say or a lot of people speaking up on behalf of our career. And so all that to say, I do think that there is a lot of room for leadership if people are willing to advocate, because everybody needs a dietitian, and they are doing better with leadership roles. Like the food service manager job that I was saying, like my boss, like she was a very good boss, and there is room for growth in that way. And we had a clinical lead on our team who was a dietitian that led us. You don't really typically see a whole lot of administration though, I feel like, that are like hospital administration, things like that. But I mean, I had a friend recently, she just got hired as like a recruiter for doctors as a dietitian. I've seen like sales jobs where dietitians can have room for growth and higher pay there because we understand medicine and diabetes tools and things like that. So I think there's room for it. I don't know if there's a lot of jobs set up for it, but I've heard a lot of really awesome things that dietitians are doing if we kind of just keep on plowing through.
And what would a normal trajectory look like for someone in your current role?
Normal trajectory, honestly, a lot of people start in clinical. So starting out, like typically people either start out in clinical or they start out in what we call community, which is what I said, like WIC typically has to have a dietitian. So if you don't know what WIC is, it's women, infants, and children. It's people who get supplemental of food, women for their children under a certain age, food pantries, countless state counties or state government that hire educators. Those are typically entry level. So people will typically stay in either one of those jobs for a couple of years, maybe anywhere from like honestly 6 months to 3 years. And then typically they move on to doing something else. So that next level could be something like they become the clinical lead or the clinical manager there, or they go higher up within their county government for whatever that next role is. Maybe it's the food service director for the whole county for the government or something like that. And then I don't honestly know what the next step is. I feel like for the dietitians that I know that work that long, some of them end up going into education because it's, I feel like it's a pretty kind of cushy role. But yeah, I think that's what I typically see is the progression there.
Do you find that it's a fairly evened stress level, or do you find that there are some situations where, you know, it is a high stress job?
No, I feel like it's pretty low stress. I mean, I felt like it was low stress just because the change is so slow with nutrition. You don't see, you know, I feel like with other medical professions and their specialties, you have to have automatic feedback or like automatic results, where nutrition is a long game. And so it seemed a little bit less stressful because I knew that there wasn't going to be automatic like improvement. You know, it has to be something that's, it's gradual over time. So I didn't feel the pressure of like, oh my gosh, by tomorrow their A1C is going to have to be down. I'm like, no, that's going to take a couple months. The only thing I feel like that was stressful or that even like causes some burnout in dietitians is nutrition is on the other person. Like, it's our job to teach, but it's the other person's job to act on it. And there's only so much we can do. Like, we are taught a lot in school on how to provoke action through like motivational interviewing. But at the end of the day, if the other person isn't going to do what you tell them, it kind of can feel a little hopeless that what you're doing. So that's the only time I really see stress, but I don't really see stress in terms of like, oh my gosh, there's like so much to do. We're so busy. Like, I'm going to lose my job type of thing.
That's helpful. One of the things we like to explore with the different professions that we look at on this podcast is, what does, you know, a regular day look like? So walk us through, you know, a regular weekday from kind of the time you get up until your head hits the pillow. What does that look like?
Okay, so a regular day, let's see, we want to talk about the clinical job.
Yeah, I mean, for example, do you have to be at work the regular hours, or do you work shifts? Do you work nights? Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
So I don't know if we were spoiled, but I do think other clinical places are like this. The good thing about working in a hospital is the patients are always there. So we kind of got to set our own hours. So typically I'd wake up, I like to kind of get my day started early. So I would wake up at 5, you know, maybe get up and do my workout for the day and then eat breakfast, go into work and have an 8-hour shift. So I was full time. So I'm full time. So I got to work. I worked 8 hours during the day. Typically I go in around 7, get done at 3, but some days I go in at 10 and get off at 6 or 7, and through the whole day, I already kind of describe what the day to day looked like in the job. But then I get home and at 6, cook dinner and then go to bed. And I mean, it's pretty nice to be able to do that. Some other people I know, my coworkers, they worked part-time. So just worked the like 4 hours a day, or some people worked three full days and then had off 2 other days. But yeah, it's a pretty steady job, just 8 hours, and we got to set our own schedule. So that was really nice.
That flexibility is really nice.
Yeah.
What do you think the profession is going to look like in 10 to 15 years? One of the things that comes up in a lot of the episodes is that, you know, technology is changing the way professionals work. We're using artificial intelligence and machine learning for medicine, law, accounting. What changes do you foresee in the profession of dietitians in the next, say, 10 to 15 years?
I know, sometimes I think about this because I always get worried of like, is my job going to get replaced by a robot? I really don't know what the, like with technology, I think, well, first of all, there's so little we actually know about nutrition. The role of being a dietitian was only started in World War II because they noticed that soldiers were malnourished and they weren't fighting very well. And so the profession is actually pretty young. And then nutrition research alone is so hard to study because you kind of have to have the culmination of somebody's whole life to figure out how their nutrition played a part in anything. So all that to say that we still are uncovering so much about nutrition. A big push right now, I feel like, is the microbiome, you know, with prebiotics and figuring out how to amp that up. And even some things like genetic testing. So there's some ideas that maybe people are pre-genetically disposed to being overweight or something like that, and trying to tailor certain diets to try to fix that. But I still think that you're going to have a person to be there to explain that or to motivate that, because so many people, they just need somebody on the other line. Sometimes people start these kind of app programs or something like that for nutrition. And I think it does work for some people, but I feel like for a lot of people, they need to know that they're accountable to somebody else. And so that accountability to make change, which is what nutrition is, I think is going to have to be a real person. So I feel like there definitely is a lot of change in how we even like think about nutrition for every disease state, whether it's kidney disease, liver disease, cancer. There's so many things coming out all of the time about how we can adjust what people eat to that. But I still think that there is going to have to be a dietitian on the other side of it to explain things and to motivate people.
That's a really interesting take. The last thing I want to talk about on the professional side before we jump into the business side and the social media side of things is, what would you say is the best part of your job? And then on the other hand, what would you say is the most frustrating?
I think the best part of the job is, I feel like they're actually one and the same. So I feel like the best part of the job is nutrition. A lot of times is not considered in the hospital setting too much, or even in like in really in life. For some reason, I don't know why it's so underrated, but a lot of things can kind of go under the radar, especially in the hospital setting with nutrition. So everybody always makes sure they're eating when they're hospital. So like when things go by, like for example, I had a patient once and he was in and out of the hospital all the time because he had pancreatitis. And then he had to take these pancreatic enzymes because that's how you digest fat when you have pancreatitis. And nobody ever told him that he had to regulate the amount of fat that he was eating. And that's what a dietitian, you know, should do is, you know, explain. And he thought he was eating healthy. He was eating healthy, but avocados have a ton of fat. Salmon has a lot of fat. Olive oil has a lot of fat. And so being able to catch that little thing, and it was really easy fix to just, okay, let me explain what a low fat diet is overall, because this is how you're going to stay out of the hospital and feel better, not have diarrhea all the time. And so things like that are really exciting because nutrition, like I said, plays a part in what everybody does, since everybody eats every day. And so those things are really exciting to be able to make of such a big difference with something that I love talking about, food. But then on the flip side, sometimes that can be really frustrating because it is underrated, and I would try to advocate for a patient. You know, I think something nutritionally is really going on, but because nutrition isn't looked at that highly in the hospital setting, it's sometimes like, okay, well, you know, I would hear like, okay, well, whatever, like, we're not going to do anything about it. I'm like, this is the literally reason why they're here. And this is why they keep getting readmitted, because they're not eating, or because, I don't know, they need like a feeding tube or something like that. And so sometimes it was really frustrating to not feel like I really have a voice, or that nutrition is so important, but it wasn't really getting heard. So I feel like one and the same.
Thank you for that. I appreciate the honesty on that. So as I mentioned in the introduction, on social media, you're really active as the millennial nutritionist. How did you start that? Because I think a lot of people see social media businesses and it looks very glamorous, but there's a lot of hard work that's going on in the background. How did you get started?
How did I get started? Well, I think a lot of it came from frustrations from working in the hospital and like not feeling like I really have that voice, right? And sometimes it's really not even the right time to talk to somebody because they like maybe are not in the place to hear that nutrition is yet another thing that they're going to have to fix out of all of these other things they're going to have to do. And so I constantly felt like I wasn't being able to ever have a voice or say anything. So I kind of started took to social media a long time ago, actually before I even really created that account. I had just on my personal account would talk about nutrition all the time and kind of let it be the voice for all the things that I couldn't say. And then I finally decided to really focus on weight loss because I didn't really get to talk about it all in the hospital. Because like I said, you really more so focus on weight gain in the hospital. And I saw all of my friends really struggling with weight loss and not having a good research-backed voice. And so just wanting to fill that void, first and foremost, of weight loss and being able to use nutrition to help with that is kind of how that account all got started.
Your target audience is very specific. So you're aiming very squarely at millennials who are looking to change their lifestyle, to eat more healthily, and to specifically to manage their weight. What are some of the challenges that millennials face that is perhaps a little unique?
So millennials, going through a lot of life transitions are what the reason I really wanted to focus on millennials. So because they are focused or getting out of college, getting out of grad school, getting into their first job, getting into their first serious relationship, getting married, having kids, that's kind of the whole lifespan of millennials right now. And with every single transition, it's a readjustment with nutrition. So you may think you have everything figured out at the end of college, and then you get to your new job and you maybe have a higher budget. So you go out to eat more often and then you gain weight because of that. And then it's like, okay, I finally figured out how to eat well. And then you get into a relationship and all the, you know, sometimes people say they put on weight when they get in a relationship because what you do, you typically go on dates, on out to eat. And so things like that. And so that's why I really like working with millennials, because it's a lot of more like behavior change or critical thinking and thinking like, how do you want to view food for the long term? But the other thing that I think is really interesting is my generation, millennials, we've really seen all the struggles that our parents have had to deal with. So all those diseases I was talking about before, diabetes, liver disease, cancer, they're all related to nutrition, and they can be somewhat prevented with nutrition. But by the time you're old, you can't really do a lot about all the decisions you made when you were younger.
And the damage is done.
Right, exactly. And you can manage it at that point, but you can't really get rid of it. So trying to set a good foundation when you're younger is important, but so many other health companies prey on that and give the wrong information. And so that's another reason why millennials, I think, have a little bit harder. Is I feel like some people have been taken advantage because of that.
How much time do you have to spend on the social media side of the business in terms of just getting promotions and little informational videos that kind of build your credibility? Like what does that look like per week?
Oh my gosh, it's so much. I want to say I honestly spend like most of my weekends. So I want to say like 16 hours a week. I mean, I can definitely pull back if I wanted to.
Do you do it in one chunk on just one day on the weekend where you just get all your content ready for the week?
Yeah. And I have somebody that helps me now too. So they kind of spend their 8 hours a week working on like making backgrounds for TikTok or helping me make like figuring out like the new Instagram update, like figuring that stuff out. And so that's kind of now their job. But yeah, I used to spend a whole day on the weekend, like filming everything and figuring everything out.
It's one of those things where I think people see people being successful on social media, and they see the folks getting a lot of clicks and a lot of likes, and it seems very glamorous and almost like easy money. But once you realize how much work is involved, it really is a job putting that content out.
Yes.
Let's turn to the entrepreneurial side of you. So you've used your skills and your knowledge to create the Millennial Nutritionist, and you're targeting millennials and obviously using social media. But I think anyone who starts a business has some fears, you know, like, what if this doesn't work out? How much money should I invest in trying to get this up off the ground? What if it doesn't work? So just walk us through the process that you went through as you decided to actually turn this into a business.
So over the pandemic, I got really bored. We were sent home working in the hospital. Dietitians had to work from home too. We just had to call patients from the room. It was really hard. And I felt even more useless because a lot of people didn't answer the phone. And so I was just writing notes all day that just basically were like, I tried to call the patient and I couldn't do anything, even though everything in their chart said that they probably needed my help. And so I was trying to figure out really what to do with my time. And I always really liked business, but I never really had an intention of working in business because I like the stability of a salary job and being an employee. And so as I started to listen to so many podcasts during the pandemic, I started to understand, I was like, I could actually make money doing this. And there's essentially no startup fees as a dietitian. I mean, I already had all my education. That's the biggest startup fee right there.
You got your license.
Exactly. It's like, I just need a way to talk to people. And so once I kind of figured that out, a lot of fears went away. I mean, there's a lot of things that are still scary with the licensing thing. Like I have to be careful with HIPAA, which is something that a nutritionist doesn't have to deal with. Or like I have to, you know, be really careful about like having a contract in place and things like that to protect myself and having my new practice insurance. But it was very minimal startup fee. And I just had to have some people that want to listen to me. And as a dietitian, people are always going to ask like, can you help me lose weight? Can you help me do this? And so finally I just took one on. I was like, you know, let's just like do this and I'll try to make a program around around you. And so took my first client on. I told her just to pay me by donation, whatever she kind of thought I needed. And I continued to listen to podcasts of other entrepreneurs, specifically dietitian entrepreneurs, and kind of just kept listening to what they were saying. Took that one client and started this other Instagram. So then created a need for a platform for weight loss for millennials. And then when people saw that I was credible, I finally getting a lot more people to ask me for help. So then I created a solid program and just kept advertising it, and kind of here we are now.
What do you think it was that gave you the credibility that you just referenced?
I think, yeah, because it is hard because a lot of people don't know what dietitians are. So that's why I don't really advertise myself too much as a dietitian. So to find the credibility beyond just being like, I'm a dietitian, duh, you know, you should take me on. It's more, I think the biggest thing with dietitians is not being judgmental. That's something that I hear a lot, because a lot of people think like, well, you're not going to be okay because I drank like 4 beers this weekend. And so I think that was a big part of it, is credibility, and I'm not going to food shame you, you know, and trying to say that over and over again, and even show like, hey, yeah, I ate like cake for dinner yesterday, and like, this is me, and I'm still able to maintain my weight. Or like, and then once I got clients showing, this is what my client emailed me, you know, erasing the name and everything, but like, look, they lost 2 pounds and they feel so much better. And so continuing to show that I can help somebody else through testimonials, because that's a big thing they talk about with being a dietitian. Try not to talk too much about you and what you do to maintain your weight, more so just show what you're doing for other people. And so I think that really helped get credibility.
Because I guess it's got to be hard if you're someone, because you mentioned at the start that you used to run a lot and very active. It's got to be hard when you go and see someone in that setting where they're a long way from where they want to be. It can sometimes be intimidating to actually take this advice on because they feel so far away.
Yeah.
How did you go about kind of distinguishing yourself from the nutritionist that we talked about, where they haven't got that licensing and essentially anyone can say I'm a nutritionist? How did you separate yourself?
Oh, I think the biggest thing is showing what I know. So I try really hard not to shame other people on Instagram. Even when people ask me like, oh, what about intermittent fasting? What about keto? I try hard not to like constantly, even though that's what I'm thinking, I try hard not to like constantly shame it, because that's not a good coach. Like, I want to show overall that I'm not judgmental. If you want to do intermittent fasting with me, sure. But I'm going to show you kind of like interwoven, like why that's really not going to work. And so I think showing, first of all, thinking like, what are people getting that they don't like from these other nutritionists? And a lot of it is judginess. I've heard a lot of people are judgy out there, and a lot of people make them miserable. So eating as little as possible, they're hungry, they're deprived of energy. And then just making it, I've heard a lot of nutritionists can make it really unrealistic that they can't maintain. So taking all of that information and then rewinding it and marketing that I do the opposite without explicitly saying it. So that's what I was saying, like constantly saying, my client feels so energized and they're losing weight, or like, I didn't judge my client for, or my client told me like she loves me because I'm not judgmental. And so trying to just scream the opposite without actually calling anybody out, I think is how to differentiate yourself from that group.
So you mentioned 2 diets that have become extremely popular, intermittent fasting and keto. And, you know, I feel like every few years there's another kind of fad diet that kicks in. Do you see any of those as having value, or do you think this is just marketing and people need to eat, you know, multiple meals, 3 meals? Like, what's your generalized kind of take on things?
Yeah, so I always call them the standard diet, you know, standard fad diet that's out there, whatever's new. There's like a new rule on like whatever you should be eating, but a lot of it, it's all getting to the same thing, which is calorie deficit. So that's what I teach specifically. I mean, if you're losing weight, you're in a calorie deficit. I don't know a diet out there where you're not. And so I just strip it all away, and, you know, this is how you can be in a calorie deficit without the time limit, without only eating, you know, fat, things like that. And at the end of the day, as a dietitian, I have to do what research says, or I can get my license taken away. And, you know, if research comes out in a couple of years that says, no, that's not the case, then that's what I'm going to say. But for right now, that's what the research says. And so I go with it. And every time like a new diet does come up, I try my best to really look at what the research says so I can have a good, you know, it's not just my opinion. This is what it says. And for all those fad diets, I've never found a sound reason to recommend them, because research says that this is what should happen.
It's interesting too, you were saying, you know, the key, I mean, it's not rocket science in the sense that if you want to lose weight, you got to eat less calories. But one thing that I've noticed, especially since coming to the United States, there is so much crap in the food. high fructose corn syrup, even a salad. You know, there's some fast food restaurants where the salad has more calories than a burger. So what are some of the foods that you see a lot of your clients struggle with in the sense that they think it's healthy, but it's actually not?
Yeah. So yeah, totally true. And that's why I teach like calorie deficit, calorie counting. Dietitians do teach different methods, but that is just what I personally teach because of that reason. I think that it can help clients really understand that when you have a 700 calorie diet, I mean, a 700 calorie salad, that's the same as a 700 calorie burger in a sense with weight loss. If I was doing something else, you know, it wouldn't be, but within my scope of what I'm doing for weight loss, calorie is a calorie. And so, those high calorie salads, avocado people, you know, it's avocado's healthy, but for weight loss, they're really high calories. A whole avocado is something like 400 to 500 calories, which is like the same as, I don't know, a bunch of ice cream. Then what are else? Like something like acai bowls, those are really big right now, but they can be a lot of calories. Really healthy, but if you're trying to lose weight, you may want to look at the calories for it. I think those are kind of the biggest things that I see right there.
Are you a fan of counting macros?
Yeah. So yeah. Counting, I do calorie tracking and then macro tracking to make sure that we're optimizing all the calories that they're eating.
And what do you think of this? We're just going a bit off topic here, but what about BMI? Because that's such an old, it seems like such an old methodology that doesn't take into account a lot of factors. So you can look at it and go, good grief. Like this person who goes to the gym 5 days a week and eats really healthy is, according to BMI, like borderline obese. How did it come about and what does it still have any relevance, any applicability today?
Yeah. So how did BMI come about? I know I learned this at school, but I cannot remember. And I know, though, that what we learn in school is that it just kind of teaches people like it's like for providers, it tells you how much more at risk you are for diseases that have to do with diet. So if you're overweight, all it's really telling us is like you're just maybe at higher risk for like heart disease or diabetes. And research does indicate that. But again, the thing with nutrition is it's like hard to parse out like, you know, is the diabetes causing to be overweight or is the overweight causing the diabetes? Like that part we still don't completely have figured out with nutrition. And so I personally, you know, based off of the research, I don't use BMI a whole lot. I use it for certain calculations. So for protein amounts, I have to use if they're an obese, I have to use their ideal body weight. So I use that for obesity for BMI to figure out those things out. When I work, like the hospital is a little bit different because we do deal with diseases so much. So it is a little bit more black and white for disease specific states to get you down to. If you have, you know, if you have diabetes, yeah, let's get you down because the research does indicate that for whatever reason, when you're at a lower BMI, then it does help to decrease symptoms from diabetes. But for if you're overall healthy, I typically say, you know, let's not worry too much about the BMI.
Fantastic. Well, this has been super interesting. And I hope it has been beneficial for those who are maybe exploring different careers, whether you're a college student looking to find a career destination, or perhaps you are looking at making a career change. I just think this is a really interesting field. And certainly the Bureau of Labor Statistics suggests it's going to increase by about 8% over the next 10 years. Where can people find you? Because I know you're really active on social media.
Yeah. So for Instagram, it's the.millennial.nutritionist. And then on TikTok, it's millennial.nutritionist. And then on there, links to my website for blog posts. We do bi-weekly blog posts and then a couple of email lists. So all the things, if you need any free advice or yeah, definitely if you want to lose weight or just even ask a question, you can message me through any of those platforms.
Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Professionist Podcast. If you'd like to find out more about our past or upcoming episodes or any of our guests, head on over to www.theprofessionists.com. That is theprofessionists.com. You can find us on Instagram at theprofessionists, and we're also on LinkedIn. We'd love to have you like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. Make sure that you never miss a new episode. Stay up to date with developments in the podcast and also just great information as you progress through your own career on our blog, which is on the website. And stay in touch. Also, if you have the time, it's a huge help to the podcast if you can leave us a review. And we look forward to finding your fit next week. Thanks.